Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. This year's regular 60-day legislative session wrapped up last weekend, but Governor Susana Martinez has already signaled she will call lawmakers back to Santa Fe for a special session. Do you think lawmakers accomplished enough this year? Did they set priorities that will help move the state forward? Join our conversation today by calling 877-899-5866. This hour, we're also going to talk about the outcomes of the session, and we want to hear what you think would make state government work better. Do you have ideas that you think would help make state officials and departments more accessible and accountable to the people they serve? Again, our number is 1-877-899-5866. This show is part of the People, Power, and Democracy Project that looks at ethics, transparency, and good government. It's funded by the Thornburg Foundation and by contributions from KUNM listeners. I'd like to bring in some folks now to get us started. I'm joined in studio this morning by Andrew Oxford, a reporter with the Santa Fe New Mexican. Welcome to the Call-In Show.
Hey, Sarah.
Also, we have Associated Press reporter Russell Contreras on the phone. Welcome, Russell.
Thank you, Sarah.
Andrew, it's Thursday morning. Where do things stand at the Capitol right now? What are we watching?
It kind of depends who you ask. The session ended on Saturday, and Democratic legislators and some Republicans, too, have argued this session was a success and that they at least prevented more drastic cuts to state services. The state's broke, and this session was always going to be about how we manage what money we have. There will be cuts, of course. The budget passed by the legislature shaves funding for higher education by 1%, for example. But they avoided broader austerity measures, such as the governor's proposal to cut the state's contribution to the pensions of public employees, which would have amounted to a pay cut for, maybe tens of thousands of government workers. If it seems disheartening that a legislative session would be defined as much by what was not done as much as by what was, you have to remember, there really hasn't been much money to go around. And so that was always going to be the constraint of this session. The governor, however, argues that the legislature failed to even really address the state's finances because the budget it approved, she says, is just not a balanced one. She's refused to raise taxes, and the legislature approved a package of increases in fees and taxes that would total about $350 million. They don't expect her to, sign all of it. They always intended her to, if accept any of it, only accept bits and pieces. But she signaled that she's not going to accept any increases in taxes at all and will want them to come back with a different budget. Try again, basically.
Russell, is any of this surprising? I mean, we kind of heard the governor talk about not wanting any tax increases before the session even started.
Yeah, no, she was very clear in the beginning. Well, I don't want to raise taxes. She has been made it a point that she wanted to be the governor to come in and leave office by never having to raise taxes. At the same time, during her State of the State address, she was calling for bipartisanship. Obviously, she lost the Republican House. It was a Democratic House now. So it was in her interest to call for bipartisanship. But when you talk to both sides say that the other one was not coming to the table, that they didn't have negotiations in good faith. And it's hard to decipher what that means because the governor's office says, well, they never came to us and negotiated, only a few times. Senate Democrats of the Senate, well, she wasn't coming to us to have a good discussion of what these out. So you have two sides that basically were not talking to each other besides a couple of conversations here and there and having some negotiations. So this end result is not surprising. And within the last week or so, the governor was talking about a special session. This is going to close. But this is nothing that you're going to pass, I will sign, and giving out indications. And when you talk to Senate Democrats, they're like, oh, we're hopeful she'll pass it. So it became this game where we all knew what was going to happen, but everybody was trying to spin their own version of how events will end, even though we know that we're going to get in a special session.
Yeah. Russell, you said it wasn't surprising, but was there anything that surprised you this session, this year, this year 60-day?
There was, in fact, the number of memorials that came up, because we're dealing with a 60-day session, we're dealing with not only a budget, but New Mexico continues to seep in its poverty. We're one of the poorest states. I think Mississippi is probably number 50, and we're 49. Our unemployment is one of the worst in the nation, if not the worst now. So I thought that there would be more serious issues addressed and a more sense of urgency. When you sat and watched some of the Senate committees and they talked about making La Marcha the official dance or Gracias, New Mexico, the official winter holiday song, it seemed to me like, why are those being discussed right now when there is a sense of urgency and there's so much to be addressed? But yet those came up, and it was reporters were obligated to write about that and just put it in the context of what's happening in the state. So that surprised me, and it didn't surprise me that there was a number of those bills and morals that came forth.
Russ, what's the argument for those? Is it to say this brings folks together, helps them solve other problems?
Yeah, I mean, the argument is, we pass the morals, it's on a bipartisan effort. You're locked into these chambers, and it builds camaraderie and everything else. But on the other side, memorials have gone up since 97, when we had 15 memorials at best. Now we have 150 memorials, so it's almost gone up tenfold. And they go from, Wear Red Day to ask the BLM not to bring fracking to the Chaco Canyon area, things that are non-binding and then just there for symbolic measures. And I think there's some lawmakers and some poverty advocates, for example, who say this is wasting too much time. When you bring this up to Senate Democrats or even House Democrats, they say, well, the governor is not paying attention. Well, it's not just the governor that was being critical of it. It was the poverty activists. It was the Roman Catholic Church. It was people from the Southwest Organizing Project. They were the ones saying, come on, guys, get to work. Mm. Stop this foolishness.
Yeah. Andrew, what are some, there's so much going on during the 60-day, even for people who are watching really closely, it's really intense. What are some bills that failed that just didn't get anywhere this session that people should know about?
I think most surprising, maybe I shouldn't say most surprising, but I think most interesting, at least, given how much money was behind these bills and given how much mobilization there was around these bills, was a piece of legislation that would have closed what advocates called a gun show loophole. It was a gun control measure that would have required background checks for a broader range of gun sales, whether at a gun show, over the internet. Advocates say that this would make it harder for people with criminal histories, people who've been who are considered dangerous, to get their hands on guns. This was backed by the group Every Town for Gun Safety, which was, of course, founded by former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. They really mobilized a lot of volunteers around this, were making calls, were at the roundhouse, speaking out on these bills. And they really didn't go anywhere. I mean, the National Rifle Association jumped on this pretty quickly and threw their own weight behind the opposition, arguing that, this would really do nothing to keep guns out of the hands of criminals and would just burden law-abiding gun owners. And the bill really just died in committee. There were a lot of Democrats who really didn't seem eager to take this up. Also, floundering this year was election reform in a lot of respects. Democrats joined with Republicans to block a measure, for example, that would have opened up primary elections to independent voters, as well as a measure that would have made it easier for independent and minor party candidates to get on the ballot, as well as a proposal to institute sort of truly automatic voter registration. That was especially after the last election, when the process of voting and the process of registering voters was an issue unto itself. It was somewhat surprising that those really didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. For folks listening today, do you think the 2017 legislative session was successful? Why or why not? Was there a particular bill you were watching that made it all the way through and is on the governor's desk, or failed this year and you hope comes back next year? The number to call, 877-899-5866. You can also tweet your comments to us. We're at KUNM News. All right, Andrew, so what failed now, or what passed? What are we going to be watching? There's this period of time after the legislature where the governor can sign or veto bills.
That's right. Perhaps most consequential to people's pocketbooks, but there are two bills on the governor's desk that would raise the minimum wage. One would boost it to $9 an hour. The other would raise it to $9.25 an hour. The governor said she will not sign either piece of legislation, though. She says both increases would be too high. There's obviously another piece of legislation that consumer advocates are watching. That's a bill that would effectively ban payday lending as we know it and cap interest rates on other small loans at about 175%. That was a compromise that not a lot of consumer advocates were happy with, but it at least introduces some kind of cap. I'm also interested to watch some of these bills that are caught up in kind of a constitutional showdown. There was a measure, for example, that would allow for industrial research on hemp. That was among several bills the governor vetoed in the last week of the legislative session. And the Democrats came back after she vetoed these measures and said the vetoes were invalid. They will become law. She didn't do this correctly. And that's because the governor vetoed these bills without explanation. She sent the Senate and the House representatives messages just saying this is the bill number that I vetoed, not explaining what her objections were, not explaining why, as is usually the case. And, you know, Democrats point to the state constitution that says, you know, the governor is supposed to state their objections or return the bill with their objections. And so they're arguing that this is simply, you know, not proper. These bills will become law one way or another. And several Democrats acknowledge that they're probably going to have to go to court to resolve this ultimately. So there are several high-profile but ultimately non-controversial bills that were caught up in that. So yeah, we'll see what happens.
Russell, what about you? What are you going to be watching right now, bills that did pass that made it to the governor's desk?
Well, I'm interested to see what she's going to veto, too, as well. I mean, there have been a lot of bills that went through that she openly said, I'm going to sign. One of the bills that passed that was kind of in silly season was the green and red chili license plate. It seemed she was going to veto all those license plate bills, but that one would be a little tough because Colorado has a green chili, red chili license plate, and we don't want Colorado to have that. So that's something that, you know, on the silly side, she will probably sign, just so they make sure that Colorado doesn't have one on us. The other thing that I was interested to see, the one bill is allowing workers to use sick leave already provided by employers to care for the sick and aging relatives. That's something that seemed really interesting to me. You're allowed to take leave for a child, but can you take one for a sick, an elderly parent? That seems pretty interesting to me. And yeah, Also banning the use of solitary confinement for pregnant inmates and juveniles. We've had a number of atrocious cases here in New Mexico where people have been placed in solitary confinement who are suffering from mental illness. And one lawyer here has made a career out of it. He's been suing and winning, getting some of the largest judgments ever in some of these cases. That's something that a lot of advocates have been pushing for, but it remains to be seen would she sign this. So this is for most folks who say, yeah, we don't need a 14-year-old in solitary confinement. Neither do we need a pregnant person or somebody suffering from mental illness unless they are a danger to themselves and other inmates. So those are the bills that I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, and all of us watching to see if and when a special session is called and lawmakers come back to Santa Fe. Russell Contreras, thanks for being here today. Also, Andrew Oxford, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and you're going to stay with us here in studio. We're going to go to break really quick. Thanks for joining us today for the KUNM Call-In Show. You can join our conversation. We just gave you an update on the legislative session and what might be ahead. We're also going to talk this hour about good government and your ideas for making government work better for the people of New Mexico. The number to call, 877-899-5866. Or email callinshow@kunm.org.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting public radio KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated civil rights, criminal defense, wrongful death, security clearance, and Indian and family law cases throughout New Mexico. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from the Vortex Theater in Albuquerque, presenting Eugene O'Neill's The Iceman Cometh, March 17th through April 9th. Tickets at vortexabq.org or 247-8600.
If you print neatly, have a pleasant phone voice, and a few hours to spare the first week in April, KUNM needs you. We especially need help during weekday mornings and afternoon news, but there are slots open every day at various times. Lunch shifts get delicious sandwiches from House of Bread. Dinner is donated by Sargio's. All shifts get snacks, beverages, free CDs, and the good feeling of helping out. See the schedule on the shifts with open seats at KUNM.org. Click Help Answer Phones.
I'm Sarah Gustavus. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Today we're talking about the legislative session and good government, what that means to you, what that means in your community. Again, our number, 877-899-5866. Let's go now to Richard in Albuquerque. Richard, what do you want to add to our conversation today?
Good morning, Sarah. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a couple of questions concerning the budget. I feel like the situation is temporary because the lack of revenue is largely because of the loss of severance taxes, and as someone who's been around a long time, I know that fuel will go up in price eventually. So I feel like the situation will eventually remedy itself. So we need a temporary fix on our revenue situation. And it's funny how our legislators are willing to talk about a food tax, but they're not willing to talk as seriously about the most obvious and common sense approach to solving the revenue crisis, which would also be temporary and match the situation that we find ourselves under, which is taxing fuel with an index fuel tax, a temporary fuel tax, which would go away as the price of fuel rose. Now, I know the governor is really the roadblock to any kind of common sense revenue solution, and I just want to know what your panel feels about the chances of some common sense kind of revenue enhancement like fuel tax, which would be relatively painless because fuel is a bargain.
Yeah.
I feel like drivers wouldn't really feel a small increase in fuel taxes.
Richard, I'm going to have Andrew Oxford speak to that in just a moment. I want to take one more call first. Bill from Rio Arriba. Bill, what's your take on the legislative session?
Well, I was just kind of sad, some of the bills that I thought should have never been introduced were introduced. Because I'm a retired educator, and one of the bills that was introduced is limiting teachers, especially teachers that for whatever reason need to take off when they're sick. And of course there's always a limit on that, but that was kind of really an issue that I thought was never should have been brought up. And then the other one was the marijuana bill, and being introduced, and one of the proponents that was introducing it, that eventually it'll probably, go through depending on whatever governor we get, down the line, and just different issues, the budget, we should look into more in solar and wind and solar, and be able to help our economy that way, and just get more on that.
Yeah.
That's what I needed to cover.
Thanks for calling in today. Those are things we've heard from folks in the past before when we talked about the session. Andrew, fuel tax, how prominently did that feature in these discussions about the budget this year?
Yeah, there is a gas tax actually on the table. There was a proposal to raise the gas tax by about 10 cents, and there were different ideas for what to do with that money. The debate was over whether that money should all go towards paying for road maintenance or whether a big chunk of it should go towards propping up the state's reserves. But with New Mexico having one of the lowest gas taxes in the country, that was one place that legislators, including some Republicans in the Senate, were able to look as a place for raising revenue, one option that would be somewhat palatable, they thought.
Yeah. I'd like to bring in some more voices now. We also have in studio today Vicki Harrison, Executive Director of Common Cause New Mexico. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Sarah.
Also, Douglas Carver, Executive Director of New Mexico Ethics Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Sarah.
Let's talk a little bit about good government. Starting with you, Vicki, you look at these so-called good government bills. What does that mean to you?
For us at Common Cause New Mexico, we were founded after Watergate, and our founder, John Gardner, looked around the Capitol in D.C. and said, everybody's got a lobbyist but the people. The citizens don't have a lobbyist. So that's what when we work for good government, our issues, they fall into a few different buckets, whether it's money in politics or election reform. Was thrilled to hear Andrew give a plug out for some of the election reform bills. there's more that made some movement. And so, you know, whether or it's also maybe working with the media and making sure people have access, you know, in this day and age, having access to broadband is a democracy issue. And so for us, we're working on lobby reform, transparency, that fun and wonky campaign finance reform, ethics, and access to voting and modernization of our voting systems.
How would you rate this year's session?
Off the charts. It was the best year that Common Cause New Mexico has had in four decades.
What do you attribute that to?
I attribute it to it being time. You know, I worked on a couple of other big issues in New Mexico, namely cockfighting and the death penalty. And, you know, cockfighting took 42 years to abolish, and the death penalty took 12. And sometimes you hit that tipping point. And, you know, we had at Common Cause, we had 11 priority bills this year. Five of the 11 made it through both chambers. We just saw movement, whether it was for an independent ethics commission that the voters will get to vote on next year, or, you know, speaking of election reform, we are one of the states that cuts off voter registration almost a month before the elections. So it ends 28 days before. That is draconian. And we had a bill this year that we've worked on for many, many years that would bring that up to the Saturday before elections. And it passed the Senate. It made it to the House. And that was huge.
Even though it didn't go all the way to the governor's desk.
And, you know, this is democracy, Sarah, and we have to define success very differently. Passing one committee sometimes is a huge success. Independent redistricting, for example, we passed two committees this year, which is just as big of a success as some of the other bills that are sitting on the governor's desk.
Getting that conversation started. Douglas, an independent ethics commission, as Vicki mentioned, it did pass this year. There's been a debate year after year after year about creating an independent ethics commission in New Mexico. What do you think about this this bill that it's going to go to the people as a constitutional amendment that they can vote on?
I have to say New Mexico Ethics Watch is skeptical. And I think anyone who's heard our statements, seen some of what we said in the press, we are not as pleased as many others are. The biggest concern that we have with what's going to the voters is the last change that was made in the conference committee, putting in an imbalance on the commission to the legislature. New Mexico Ethics Watch has felt that part of what makes an independent ethics commission an independent ethics commission is that one branch of government does not have too much power. The other concern is that though we have the words ethics commission in the Constitution, the powers of the commission are not spelled out. And this is a stark contrast to the state's Judicial Standards Commission. During the debate on the Ethics Commission and what should or shouldn't be in the Constitution, many legislators said, oh, we don't need the detail in the Constitution. We can put that in later. But our Judicial Standards Commission has its membership very well balanced, its jurisdiction and its powers all in the Constitution, which prevents future meddling. So I'm a bit concerned that people think this is a done deal, that we'll have an Ethics Commission, yay, hurrah. I'll point out that the legislature itself has an ethics committee. Have we heard anything public from that ethics committee in the 20-plus years of its existence? The answer is no. So there's a lot of work to be done. I'm concerned that the pressure is now off the legislature, and when they get to the enabling legislation in 2 years' time, because I'm sure this provision will pass, that there won't be the pressure to actually have an open and transparent commission.
Do you think people want this, that it's going to change how they view government?
If it exists, will it change how they view government?
Yeah.
I think that people will count it as a win for the state that we have a commission, and then it will feed cynicism because I don't believe that the powers are going to be what we need in the state. Mm. Right now we have – that's the problem that we're finding, and I think other good government groups are finding in the state, is people are so cynical that anything can be done. So people are excited about the fact that we got an ethics commission through both chambers. We're excited about the fact that it's going to the vote, but I'm just concerned about what it's going to look like in the future.
Vicki, did you want to add something?
Well, I just want to add, I just disagree. We just disagree at Common Cause New Mexico on this because, you know, there are some powers that are still in this. And, you know, as a state that doesn't have ballot initiatives, anything that we pass has to go through our legislature. And we've been trying for 40 years to get different things passed. And this still has adjudicatory powers. I love that word. Still has subpoena powers. It's got the makeup of the commission in there, which we're not nearly as concerned about. And, you know, the problem is that what Douglas just said is, you know, the idea that this is done is exactly wrong. We cannot. I mean, once we pass it in 2018, the citizens have to show up. They have to be there in January 2019 and make sure that what everybody just said on record, on camera, to the newspaper is going to be in the enabling legislation. You know, we started out with something that looked very similar to the Judicial Standards Commission. And let me tell you, legislators do not like the Judicial Standards Commission, and neither do a lot of the judges. I felt sorry for the guys that actually work on that issue because they got wrapped up in ours. So we're very pleased with what's, and we think it's got a lot more powers. The other option that we've been, you know, told was that we would get a one sentence that would say the state will create an ethics commission. So to get what we got versus what we were told we could get, pleased as punch.
Interesting. Russell Contreras from the Associated Press, you also followed this legislation during the session. What's on your mind looking ahead to if this does pass, as Douglas thinks it will? What does that mean for New Mexicans and for when the session, when the lawmakers come back to look at how to get down to the specifics?
Well, the devil is going to be the details. When they come back and bring that legislation, if it passes by the voters, the lawmakers will have to put the meat into it. And even watching this debate, I still it was interesting to me to see some lawmakers use the same old argument that they have for years, even though they may have supported it later, saying that this could be a witch hunt, that they could go after lawmakers for the smallest thing. I don't think a lot of them know that most people don't care if you're a target of a witch hunt. If you are a lawmaker, you're in a position of privilege, then if you've done nothing wrong, you have nothing to worry about. If there is some real estate deal or some sort of campaign finance that is questionable, the Ethics Commission will look at it. And if you did something wrong, they will come out and say you did. And if you didn't, you have nothing to worry about. So that's still a debate that I'm interested to see when it comes back in 2018 or 2019, when this law comes back, because the meat still has to be put in. And I think that is when we can consider this a victory or not.
Interesting. Do you think an independent ethics commission will make state officials act more ethically? Why or why not? Or do you think state government represents the interests of everyday New Mexicans? What would you change to make sure decisions in Santa Fe represent the needs of people across the state? Join our conversation today on the KUNM call-in show by calling 877-899-5866 or email callinshow@kunm.org. And we already have an email comment today from Jan in Mountain Air. She wants to remind Governor Susana Martinez that the people pay her salaries and her cabinet's salaries, and that every time they don't respond to reporters' questions, including KUNM reporters, it gives the impression that they are governing in secret, and that does nothing to engender trust. So Ethics Commission, we've also got some other bills that you followed. Vicki, you tracked 77 bills this session. One deals with campaign finance that also made it to the governor's desk. What's in there?
You know, this is a big bill that we've been working on with Senator Peter Wirth for several years, let's say 6 or 7. And it would update our Campaign Finance Reporting Act. And, you know, right now, candidates, PACs, parties, everybody reports. But the parts of our law have been struck down. So the independent groups, the business groups, the nonprofits, you know, those folks who don't have a primary purpose of playing in elections, they don't have good guidelines right now. And, you know, another thing you hear a lot about, Sarah, these days is coordination. You know, people are always asking me, is that PAC coordinating with that candidate? Well, currently, we don't even have the word coordination in our statute. So this would update it, give us as much information, as much as we love to slam the Citizens United ruling, and it deserves all the slamming in the world. There was a secondary opinion in that ruling 8-1, actually, that said, but of course you will require disclosure. So this bill just requires a level playing field. We got hit at the last minute, as it happens every single year, by opposition. They literally wait until we get to the second chamber with a week left. And they get this group in D.C. called the Center for Competitive Politics, who basically sues against contribution limits and disclosure. And they came in and said we were going to require all C3 nonprofits to report. And that simply is not true. But that's literally just as big as the ethics this year.
Douglas, what other bills were you watching?
Sarah, some of the other bills we were looking at and hoping to see at least minimal progress on were the lobbying disclosure bills. And again, this feeds into my skepticism of our Ethics Commission. And just to clarify one point, everything in the Ethics Commission is as provided by law. And we saw with lobbyist disclosure bills, Senator Steinborn had three that were good bills. They all went to their untimely death at Senate Rules Committee, as is not unusual for any kind of open government legislation in the state. There was another bill that Representative Dines had introduced on lobbying, and that got gutted. It was to create a 2-year window to help stop the revolving door in our state. Senate Rules gutted that, cut it down to 1, added some other restrictions, but that didn't pass the Senate. So that was one issue that we would have liked.
It actually wasn't even brought up on the Senate floor.
Yeah.
So it's not that it didn't pass the Senate.
Or it didn't, yeah.
Right.
It sort of died on the Senate floor. And the other issue is financial disclosure. New Mexico Ethics Watch put out a report right before the session. It got some press, pointing out all the flaws in both the application of the Financial Disclosure Act. This is the personal financial disclosures that legislators, cabinet officials, and others need to file.
What would be on that? Explain to people. What if you were to look at someone's financial disclosure form, what would you see?
Not much is the short answer.
What should you see?
You should see. Well, what is required to be seen is perhaps the best way to answer that, is your employer, if you have one, your residence. And then the law specifies that your income stated generally. So you can write, for instance, farming and ranching. There's no income bracket, so you don't know whether you're getting it has to be over $5,000, so you could be getting $5,001 from whatever farming and ranching entails, or $5 million. The same, you have to list some consulting, real estate, also in general categories, any sort of boards or commissions that you're on in the state. There's nothing that says anything about out of state. And that's pretty much it, just to give you a quick overview. It's very general. The generality is written into the statute. Even with those minimal standards, we found that legislators and cabinet officials and heads of boards and commissions aren't even meeting those standards. I know the new Secretary of State has been working really hard on checking them and bringing up compliance up. We were hoping to see some sort of legislation on that. There was a very simple bill that got introduced to make a couple of tweaks. The Secretary of State supported it. It didn't actually require more disclosure. It just made the process of filing those forms easier. That wasn't able to pass.
Remind us, why do we care about this? Like, why does it matter if we know where our lawmakers are getting their money from, where they might have real estate or other financial interests? Why do we care?
We should care because it prevents self-dealing. And that's, I mean, to be blunt about it. I'm not saying that everyone's on the take or everyone's corrupt. But we don't know who might be or who might not be. We saw with the matter with Senator Grego a couple of years ago that there's some self-dealing going on there.
He made money off a real estate deal that he supported in the legislature.
He supported the legislature and acted as some sort of middleman. I'll use a great example from the federal government. Former Speaker of the House, Denny Hastert, passed some legislation that was able to get a road run through some property he had, which increased the value of that property. We would have no idea to know if that's the case in this state. And since we have, and the state seems to embrace these part-time legislators who have possibly active business interests, careers, et cetera, it's doubly important for us to know when there might be some sort of financial tie between a vote or an action and what comes out in the legislation. The same thing with our cabinet secretaries, the same thing with our very many boards and commissions who basically operate in the shadows. No one knows what they do or what decisions they make, but they can have significant power in the state. And we don't know if there's a conflict, and the people should know.
The people should have that option. What do you think would make elected officials more accountable? Do you want to see more disclosure about donations and financial interests? Do you think that that's something that people would pay attention to? The number to call today, 877-899-5866. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Sarah Gustavus. I'm joined today by Douglas Carver from New Mexico Ethics Watch, Vicki Harrison from Common Cause New Mexico, Andrew Oxford from the Santa Fe New Mexican, and Russell Contreras from the Associated Press. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to go to a quick break, but we do want to hear from you, 877-899-5866.
Sometimes people don't have extra cash to give to KUNM, but would still like to support the station somehow. Well, there's another way to really help us out. If you have a car or truck that's partially restored or just wouldn't be worth much as a trade-in, call our vehicle donation line. We'll tow it from your home or repair shop, sell it, and it'll be the same as if you sent us a check. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Cree Nation singer Rhonda Head's latest CD, Kisagiten, stems from her passion for classical music. We'll sample more of this album on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Our focus this hour is good government. What does that mean to you, good government? What makes you trust or not trust government officials? 877-899-5866 is the number to call. KUNM is also on Twitter and Facebook. Search for us on Twitter at KUNM News. Russell Contreras from the Associated Press, question for you. What other bills have you been watching that you think might affect how folks trust state government, might make a difference?
You know, there was one we mentioned before, was the elections bill that failed, and this was an attempt to open up the primary. If we continue to have closed primaries, as we do, it's only going to foster to the partisanship that we see in the state and also in Washington. If you don't have allow a chance for independents and moderates to come in and have a say on who nominees are, you get two polarized options when the general election comes. So this this attempt to try to open up primaries and the resistance just fosters this distrust, because what it is, the only argument that is being put forth are by the partisans. This is our party. We have a say. Oh, but you have a say in the general election. So I think this is going to, as it moves forward and we see more elections, you're going to start to see more partisanship in the House. You're already starting to see that in the House, and not so much in the Senate yet. But what is going to happen is, as folks like John Arthur Smith and Ingalls retire, you're going to have more partisans come up there, and it's going to be harder to strike a deal when you have an impasse like this on the budget.
Doug, did you want to add something there?
I would like to add something to that issue, which is the related question of ballot access, the ease of candidates getting on the ballot. And one of the aspects of New Mexican elections is that we have some of the highest barriers for a non-traditional party getting on the ballot and for their ability to stay on the ballot. And open primaries is one avenue to sort of give the people more choice. Another choice, which would be more representative of other democracies, is allowing more people to be on the ballot, allowing make it easier for a Green or a Libertarian candidate, et cetera, to be on the ballot, stay on the ballot, get some of the state support that comes with being on an official party with the state. And that's not even really on the table in our state or many places in the country. It's not a hot issue, but it's one that people should keep in mind. It should be easier for candidates to be on the ballot, which would give people a choice.
Mm. We have a question now. Mike in Albuquerque, what's your question you'd like to bring up today?
Yeah, I think this is probably more directed towards Mr. Carver. You know, many folks for a lot of years in the state have wanted to see an ethics commission created. And with all the corruption and transparency problems that we have in this state, I think it's about time that this happened. So I'm kind of wondering if Mr. Carver isn't making the perfect enemy of the good here, considering that the Ethics Commission passed and now goes to the voters and is long overdue in this state. And I just wonder if you could address that for us.
Absolutely. Douglas Carver.
I'm quite happy to. Thank you for the question. And I worked in the legislature for 5 years. I have been a drafter as those bargains have been struck and made. And I understand the perfect is the enemy of the good. That's why I mentioned when I made my comments about the commission that our biggest concern was the imbalance in the commission, for that to be written into the Constitution. Ideally, the other powers and structure of the Ethics Commission would have been in the Constitution, which makes it safer from future tampering. But this imbalance of power with the legislature that's in the commission is worrying. There has been a lot of talk in the years surrounding the Ethics Commission debate that any commission will just take any issues involving the legislators themselves and kick it over to the Legislative Ethics Committee process. That was in some of the bills that were introduced. Many legislators will say, it's a bipartisan opinion, we have a process in the legislature and it works. The fact that the commission got moved into the Article 5 of the Constitution is a little bit arcane and legalistic, but that's the executive branch article. It got shifted over there. So we now are asking the people to give the legislature almost entire power over how the commission will be formed, both through statute, and 6 of the 7 members are being appointed through legislative power, 4 directly and 2 by a conference of those 4 legislative members. New Mexico Ethics Watch believes, and we believe before the session started, that a bad commission would actually do more harm than a good commission, or could do more harm. And we have great enforcement powers for many of our ethics laws between the AG and the Secretary of State. Traditionally, they haven't used them. Our state auditor shows that what happens when you have a public official actually use the powers of the office for better government. That explains our concerns about the Ethics Commission going to the voters.
We have another question from Patrick in Albuquerque. Patrick, welcome to the call-in show. What's your question?
My question is in regards to the judicial bench. And basically my question is what kind of regulation or what kind of ethic board or what kind of oversight is set up for specific judges that are not operating under the United States Constitution? They're operating under commercial code. But at the same point in time, they're head judges, but they're also the president of the Bar Association. So what is going to be done to be able to, put a ban against that for conflict of interest?
That's a tough one, Patrick. I don't know if we have someone who's an exact expert in that, but Vicki Harrison, do you have something you can say about that?
Thanks for the question. I unfortunately get this question from around the state on quite a regular basis, and it is the Judicial Standards Commission that would accept complaints around judges. And if you have made a complaint there and you haven't heard back from them, then maybe you also contact the state bar. I know you just mentioned the person you're referring to may be the president of some bar. But there's a lot of different bars in the state. So it can be a frustrating issue, especially for a citizen. Mm.
Andrew Oxford from the Santa Fe, New Mexican. We've talked a little bit today about not just what the laws are, what the rules are, but the perception about government, the perception about whether someone has interests outside of that are not being brought into those conversations about legislation. We spoke with you this session about a bill, Senate Bill 430, which Senator Neville introduced, sponsored, it passed the Senate, but then he pulled it back because there were some issues that were brought to his attention later. Tell us a little bit about what happened there.
Yeah, this was a really strange bill. The Children, Youth, and Families Department leases space at a complex on the corner of Central and San Mateo, and this is where some children land when taken into the state's care. But it's not really set up for handling a stream of children. I mean, it's an office building. So the state has looked at buying a building. That didn't work out. They've looked at leasing other space. They say that would be too expensive. So at the same time, the state would be prohibited under its rules from extending its lease on this office space for too much longer. State agencies usually can't lease the same space for more than 20 years. It's just written into the procurement rules. So the landlord, though, had made a deal about this building. The state says that they would be able to have upgrades made at this building, have a center built at this building for children entering the state's care, and be able to extend their lease there, really get what they were looking for while keeping the total cost of the taxpayers at least flat. But obviously would need to extend those rules. So Senator Stephen Neville, a Republican from Aztec, sponsored a bill that would waive that 20-year lease limit just for this property. I mean, it would have been just for this facility and for the Children, Youth, and Families Department and the other state agencies there. But Neville said in committee hearings that there was no connection between the building's owners and folks in state government. I mean, I think he and other state officials went out of their way to argue that, you know, this is not a sweetheart deal for anybody. This is not a kickback for anyone. This is just the best deal, and we need to be able to make the rules flexible. But it turned out that the owners of that property, or at least a few of them, had donated upwards of $26,000 to the governor and her PAC since 2014. That only came to light after the Senate had passed the bill. So in a pretty extraordinary floor session, he asked to withdraw the bill. And a lot of Democrats, you know, called for, you know, some sort of investigation. They argued that this was really, again, a sweetheart deal. They raised a lot of questions about, you know, what was the real purpose of this bill, whether it was really going to benefit taxpayers or whether this was designed for something else, political expediency, I don't know. But, yeah, it turned into a very strange, strange episode. And still, you know, Neville maintains that this was just an honest mistake. You know, really did not know about these contributions when he was speaking about them. But still, there are some Democrats who say they have real questions that are not answered yet.
And we spoke to him for New Mexico in Focus a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, it's really difficult for lawmakers to track all of these things. They trust state employees to be looking into this, to be going through the records and the logs of who's made donations.
That's right. And part of the problem seemed to be, at least from the telling of Senator Neville, as well as officials at the state, how they used the search portal online. I mean, as simple as what box they clicked when they searched for the landlords. And you get different results when you click different boxes on the webpage. You know, things like that. Of course, there are some lawmakers who don't exactly buy that argument and say that, well, they should have known, or they did know, or they still have some unanswered questions. But, yeah, this is one of those cases of lawmakers really with conflicts colliding, I think, on the floor of the Senate.
There's been in recent years, Douglas mentioned Senator Phil Griego earlier, who stepped down as a senator in the middle of a session a couple of years ago over this real estate deal that is still in process, the investigation and court case with that. Vicky, do you think that is this an example of a success that, okay, we identified this and now it stopped in the legislative session and they can go back and look at it again? Do you think this helps the perception that the government is being responsive to these things?
It doesn't help perception at all. And that's what's so frustrating. I get ribbed a lot by the media because I say that the vast majority of our legislators are good people. And even the ones that have never voted on any of my issues for the last two decades are typically very good people. And that's true. The problem is that one bad apple spoils the bunch. And that's exactly what happens. And we hear the legislators say it, you know. I mean, it was something that Russell said earlier about the frivolous complaints and ruining my reputation. You know, I mean, I'm finding op-eds that Common Cause submitted to the Albuquerque Journal from the 70s that address that same issue. So Russell is correct. We've been having that same argument for 40 years. And so that's where, you know, having an ethics commission, having hearings that are public, having things that are released so everybody knows, that's just what people want. When people talk about good government and is my government responsive to me, they want a level playing field. They want to make sure that the campaign donor or your cousin's babysitter didn't get a better deal than them. And, you know, something Andrew just said brings up a point that nobody ever wants to talk about, is the fact that we are the last citizens legislature in the country. We don't pay our legislators. We pay them a per diem while they're in session. So what does that really mean? What that means is the only people who can run, I mean, you don't have your average people that can serve in the legislature. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can't take 2 months or a month off my job every year. So you have more retirees, you have attorneys, you have people who own their own businesses, you have people who do ranching or farming and have those winter months off. And in addition to not paying our legislators, they don't have staff. So I believe these legislators when they say they didn't have time to look up information. They get a part-time person to help them out during the session. Otherwise, they're on their own.
We have a comment from Greg in Los Lunas. He says, the reason we don't trust government is because lawmakers aren't playing by the same rules as their colleagues. Nothing will change until we design rules that take into account the real human tendencies to undermine the law. Douglas, we're going to wrap up here this hour. Do you think that people are trying to do the right thing and we just need the right rules? What's your thoughts as we move ahead?
I have to agree with Vicky in that most of the people in our legislature and in our state government want to do the right thing. Looking forward, we need to have the enforcement arms of the state do their jobs. We need an AG to be aggressive about investigating, Secretary of State to be aggressive about enforcing the statutes under her jurisdiction, the auditor to be aggressive. With our police, we don't say, they arrested a lot of people over the weekend, therefore we have a problem with crime. We say, yay, the police are doing their job. We need the state authorities to do the same, and we need our legislators to trust the people. The people will know whether a complaint is frivolous or not. They need to open up their process and trust the people to have the judgment to discern what's frivolous and not.
I want to go to our two reporters that are with us this hour. Russ Contreras from the AP. Is there a way that you think this information, these things like disclosures, could be more accessible for journalists who are trying to cover bills as they go through the legislature?
Absolutely. When we look up the I was looking at some of the campaign finances. The way it's positioned right now is you have to look up different quarters and add it up. There's not a place where you can go to say, well, let me look up this legislator's donations from the past 5 years. And then you have to do it meticulously, go through quarter to quarter to add up. This came up when the debate over the payday loan reform was hitting some of the committee work. And what we found was that there was a proposal to cap payday loans at 36%, but the one that passed was the one, the cap at 175. Those who were getting donations from payday loan companies were the ones that were supporting the cap at 175. So it was very clear that they had an interest in doing that because that's who was supporting them. And yet these representatives were in areas that are some of the most impoverished in the state. To put that context, which we did in several stories, let the readers know that, look, this is a proposal that is before on one committee. It's trying to cap rates at 36% like New York. However, for some reason, there is a push to cap it at 175. And when you put it in that context, it makes readers understand.
Andrew, what about you? Any changes you think would help you do your job better?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that's always hard to track down and that I think would be useful not only for journalists like myself, but also for just the regular citizen is how their lawmakers are voting. You know, it can be hard to track down where is your lawmaker voting on a particular bill or on a particular issue. What's their track record like? I think that we have some good tools out there on nmlegis.gov, the legislature's website, to track bills, to find bills, to see the changes that have been made. Webcasts have been archived this year for both the House and the Senate. You can go back and watch all of it all over again if you want to, and that's a great tool. But still, there's a lot of data out there that we could use and would be really helpful if it were made more accessible.
Vicky, very quickly, I want to end with one thought. You offer citizen lobbying training, helping people understand the process and go up and talk to their lawmakers. Briefly tell us why that's important moving forward now that we're out of the legislative session. We've got the rest of the year, but government's still going.
Because we have more access to our legislators in New Mexico than any other state in the country. This is the perfect time to lobby your legislators, people. They are at home. They are in your neighborhoods. This is the time to go and talk to them about what's important to you.
That's all the time we have today. Thank you to everyone who called in today to share your thoughts on good government and to our guests. The People, Power, and Democracy Project is hosting a live in-person event on April 4th at Embassy Suites in Albuquerque. We want you to share your thoughts on what would make government better and make it work for the people. Find a link to details and directions for how to RSVP on today's show at KUNM.org. I'm Sarah Gustavus. I'm also the producer of New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS. This show is part of our People, Power, and Democracy Project that looks at ethics, transparency, and good government. It's funded by the Thornburg Foundation and by contributions from listeners like you. Join us next Thursday morning at 8 for another community conversation here on The Call-In Show. This is 89.9 KUNM.